The resurrection is God's proof to us of the hope that we have and the promises that he has given us. He raised his own son from the dead, and that's the prototype for our resurrection. And so that's what gives us joy and hope, because we know that as he is now, we will be one day. So we want to talk about the resurrection. Now, one of the problems that we face, we have four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And one of the problems that we face is in trying to harmonize all four of these accounts of the resurrection. You know, if you have, the resurrection is given to us as, in these four Gospels, are given to us as eyewitness testimony that Christ was raised from the dead. Now, if we're gonna fairly evaluate the evidence, if you have four witnesses that come to court and they all tell exactly the same story with all the same details, you know, when they're put on the stand, and you can't find any discrepancies at all in these four testimonies, which are supposed to be independent, that is, they're not supposed to have talked to each other and, you know, concocted a story, what would be your first supposition if you have four different witnesses and all of them tell exactly the same story with all exactly the same points? No, you know, one witness doesn't give you points that other witnesses leave out or vice versa. What would be your first guess is going on?
Collusion.
There's been collusion, right? There's been a story concocted and people have memorized it and now they're just spewing it out. On the other hand, what if you have four witnesses that they all tell generally the same story, but each one of them has unique details that the others don't have, or not all the others have? What would you think of that? It's probably likely to be true. It kind of takes away that the doubt that they all colluded together. What if you have four accounts and there appear to be contradictions between some of the details in those four accounts? That is, you know, this one said, you know, somebody robbed the bank. They saw somebody rob the bank, and he fled on a bicycle, and he was wearing, you know, bright red pants. And this guy says, no, he fled in a getaway car, and he was wearing blue jeans. Now, those are mutually exclusive details, aren't they? I mean, he couldn't have fled on a bicycle and in a car, and he couldn't have, you know, worn two different color jeans. So those are conflicting details. And what does that tell us about the testimony? At least some of it is false, right? Not all the witnesses are, either they didn't, you know, they really didn't see what they claim to have seen or something, right? Now, when we come to the Gospels, we need to treat them in the same way that we would evaluate evidence that is being presented to us, because it's presented to us as a different eyewitness accounts of the same events, right? What we would hope is that the accounts would be, you know, yes, there would be diversity. There would be things in one that are not in the in others and so forth, unique details in various ones. But we would hope that there are not conflicting statements. All right, that's where we run into problems. Now, one of the reasons that the Bible is attacked by those who don't believe it's the Word of God is because of these alleged discrepancies in the resurrection accounts. And what I want to do today is I want to look at those. We're going to look at all four of the gospel accounts of the resurrection. And this is probably going to take two lessons before we're done with the resurrection. I want to point something out to you, though, in Mark's account. Actually, I'll tell you what, let's just read Matthew's account first, okay? Matthew's account is almost certainly the oldest account written by Matthew, one of Jesus' disciples, so he should have had firsthand knowledge. He should have been eyewitness to many of the things that he wrote about. Matthew chapter 28, Let's see what Matthew says. Now, what I want you to do as we're reading these four accounts is I want you to see if you can pick out any apparent discrepancies. All right? And I say apparent discrepancies because I don't believe there are any discrepancies. But there are things that are said that seem to be problematic with something said by somebody else. All right, one of the other Gospels. All right, so you see if you can pick out any of these. All right, Matthew 28, verse 1. Now, after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. His countenance was like lightning, and his clothing as white as snow. And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. But the angel answered and said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, he is risen, as he said. Come see the place where the Lord lay. And go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and indeed he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you." So they went out quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to bring his disciples word. And as they went to tell the disciples, behold, Jesus met them, saying, "Rejoice." So they came and held him by the feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brethren to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." I'm not going to read the part about the guards going back to the their employers and reporting the angel and all that stuff. But let me ask you this: what are some of the details that we see here? First of all, we see the women. It starts out with the women coming to the tomb, right? Which women are mentioned? All right, Mary Magdalene is going to be a prominent feature in all four of the gospel accounts of the resurrection. She's always mentioned first. She's going to be sort of the leading role here in this drama. All right, and it says the other Mary. So Matthew lists two women, right? Two women. Both of them named Mary. Mary Magdalene, and it says the other Mary. It doesn't say which other Mary. Actually, it's difficult to tell from Matthew because there are several Marys in the Gospels. But Mark and Luke actually clarify some of that. All right, now, so we have the women coming. We have this great earthquake and an angel rolling back the stone. And then we have the angel telling the women to go back and tell his disciples that he is risen. And then after that, while they're going to tell his disciples, Jesus meets them and he tells them to go tell the disciples that he will meet them all in Galilee. Right? Now, Galilee is a long ways away. It's up in the north. All right, so that's the general gist of it. Now, let's go to Mark chapter 16. Now, I have to tell you something about Mark's account. Mark actually gives us two accounts. And I have them listed in my notes as Mark A and Mark B. And it's apparent that verses 9 through the end of the chapter are an addition to the Gospel of Mark. I'm not saying they weren't written by Mark. I believe they were written by Mark. But I believe that there, and we also know from the manuscript evidence that there are copies of Mark's Gospel, ancient copies of Mark's Gospel, that do not include verses 9 through the end of the chapter. In other words, almost the whole, well, half of chapter 16 is missing in some very, very old copies of Mark. But in some other very, very old copies of Mark, it's all there. All right, so there appears to have been two versions of the Gospel of Mark in the very early days of Christianity. And I think that probably what has happened, this is my guess, is that Mark originally wrote the short version and then he appended something to it later. Because you have to understand, these gospel writers, they were traveling with the apostles as they went out to preach the gospel to the nations, and they wrote down their account so that when they established a church, they could leave a written account of what Jesus did and said with those people, so they had something in writing, and that's what their purpose was. So what they would do is he wrote the account, and then they copied it and copied it and copied it everywhere they went and left copies of it in all these various places. My view is that Mark, shortly after he wrote the initial one, appended verses 9 through 20 to his own gospel, and then actually the long version is the majority reading. I mean, that's the one that you'll find in the vast majority of manuscripts. There's only a few manuscripts that don't have it, okay? Now, also, it seems evident that Mark is giving in 16, 1 through 8, he kind of gives a very brief summary of the resurrection, and then in beginning of verse 9, it seems like he goes back to the beginning and tells, and he like fills in some details that he didn't put in his original account. That's how it appears in the text. Now let's look at it and you'll see what I mean. Now we're going to refer to verses 1 through 8 as Mark A, and then we're going to refer to verses 9 through the end of the chapter as Mark B. That is sort of a second or appended account of the resurrection. There's no conflict between them, but there's extra details added. All right, so chapter 16, verse 1. Now when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Now, we have more women mentioned here, don't we? So it's Mary Magdalene, and now Matthew calls the other Mary, we have identified here as Mary the mother of James. All right, so now we know which Mary it was. And then he says, and Salome. Salome? Salome? Whatever. All right, so now we have three women mentioned. All right. They brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Very early in the morning on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. Now, question, what did Matthew say about the time that they came to the tomb? He says, as it began to dawn towards the first day of the week. Mark says, when the sun had risen, past tense. So the sun was up. All right. Now that's something we have to reconcile, but we'll get to that in a little while. Verse 3. And they said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. Now notice it says, go tell his disciples and Peter. We don't find that in Matthew. He just says, go tell the disciples. But he specifically singles out Peter. The angel singles out Peter here. That's important. He is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him as he said to you. So they went out quickly and fled from the tomb, for they trembled and were amazed, and they saw nothing, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Now here they are. They're heading back. Now Matthew says that while they were heading back, they encountered Jesus, right? Mark doesn't mention that. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. He just doesn't mention it. He sort of ends his account here with the women leaving the tomb. But now we have something that seems to go back to the beginning again. And it says, starting in verse 9, now when he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene. And the word first is very important because that's telling us that the very first person who saw Jesus alive was Mary. In Matthew's account, all the women meet Jesus together. Okay? That seems like a difficulty, doesn't it? All right? Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons, she went and told those who had been with him as they mourned and wept. And when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. Now, verses 12 and 13 talks about the two on the road to Emmaus, which Luke also mentions, but we're not going to get into that yet. I want to stick to the events surrounding the resurrection itself, okay? Now, let's go to Luke's account. Luke chapter 24. Verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they, and who are they? If you have to go back to the previous chapter, it's talking about the women who were present at the cross during his crucifixion and who had observed where he was buried, okay? So it says, and now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb bringing the spices which they had prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. Then they went in and did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And it happened, as they were greatly perplexed about this, that behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Now, wait a minute. Matthew had one angel who rolled away the stone and sat on it. Mark had one angel who was inside the tomb. Luke says they saw two men, or these were angels, right? Stood by them in shining garments. Then, as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when while he was still in Galilee, saying, 'The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again.'" And they remembered his words. Then they returned from the tomb and told these things to the 11 and to the rest. Now, he names the women here, verse 10. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna. So now we have Joanna, who wasn't mentioned in Matthew or Luke, right? Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. Now, how many women do we have?
We're here or total?
Total.
Four.
You forgot Salome, too, who was also mentioned in Mark. What? And right, so we have four named, plus it says other women, plural. That means at least two more. So we have a minimum of six women, and there may be more than that.
There'll be a minimum of five.
No, six.
No, because Luke doesn't mention Salome. So we have four.
Okay,
names.
All right. All right, yeah, that could be. Yeah. That could be, yeah. A minimum of five women, but women plural probably means more than two more, right? It could be several more. All right. Now, why would one account only mention Mary Magdalene and the other Mary? And one account mentioned three, and another account mentioned several.
Maybe to them those were the important ones to mention. And they
didn't. Okay. Yeah, you have to kind of get into the mind of the writer, because certain of the women are well known. You might call them the popular ones, you know, among Jesus' followers, or the ones that were very, very prominent amongst Jesus' followers. And so, you know, the testimony of certain women might carry more weight than just, you know, some women that were kind of seen as being on the fringes, you know. So those are reasons that make sense as to why there might be more mentioned in one. Matthew or Mark doesn't say only two women came, right? It just only names, Matthew names two, and Mark names three, I guess, and now we have more, okay, mentioned by Luke. So that's really not a conflict, but what it's showing us is that there are details that are being given by different eyewitnesses that are not all identical. They don't, so far we haven't seen anything that really conflicts, all right, but we will see something that apparently conflicts in a moment. Their words, verse 11, their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb, and stooping down, he saw the linen clothes lying by themselves, and he departed, marveling to himself at what happened. Now, question, did Peter run to the tomb before or after the women knew that Jesus had been resurrected?
After.
Okay, he had heard from them that Jesus had been resurrected. In fact, they had seen Jesus, according to Matthew's account, right? And they had told them that he's alive, and they also told him about the angels. So Peter ran to the tomb after having heard the report that they were alive, that Jesus was alive, right? All right, now, let's go to John's account. Yeah. Yes. And then we have Peter run into the tomb, right? All right, let's look at John chapter 20. Now, John's gospel was written quite a bit later than the other three. Matthew was written first, very, very close to the time that the events took place. Mark's gospel was probably written fairly close to Matthew's gospel. Luke's account also was written at least before the destruction of Jerusalem, all right? John's account was written probably several decades later, when he was an older man, giving sort of a kind of filling in a lot of details that the other Gospels didn't have. All right, but also keep in mind that John was an eyewitness, and he was a participant in the things that he talks about, all right? While Luke claims to have interviewed other eyewitnesses and put his account together as a sequential account of all that Jesus said and did, based on the eyewitness testimony of the others, all right? So Luke was not an eyewitness of these things, although he got his information from eyewitnesses. Matthew was an eyewitness. Mark probably wasn't, but he was Peter's nephew, so he probably got his information from Peter. Luke got his information from interviewing eyewitnesses, and John was there. Okay. Chapter 20, verse 1. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark. Now, I want you to underline that. While it was still dark. What did Mark say? After the sun had risen. All right. Do both of them mention Mary Magdalene? Yeah. All right. While it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Peter therefore went out, and the other disciple, and that other disciple was John, we've talked about that before, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran. Now, Luke's account only has Peter going, right? But now we know that John went also. All right? Or apparently. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter. John was probably a little younger and a little more physically fit than Peter, who was kind of, you know, an older guy. Anyway, he outran Peter and came to the tomb first. And he, stooping down, said, looking in, saw the linen clothes lying there, yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and ran into the tomb. I'm sure he was all out of breath and about to collapse. And he saw the linen cloths laying there and a handkerchief that had been around his head, not laying with the linen clothes, but folded together in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who came to the tomb first went in also, and he saw and believed. Now I want you to notice, please underline, it says he saw and believed. Now, Peter and the other disciples didn't believe the testimony of the women. But John, he ran, he saw the empty tomb, and he saw and he believed. And this is an important clue when we start putting together the sequence of events. John believed as soon as he saw the empty tomb. Peter did not, nor did the other disciples, which we'll get to later. All right, for as yet they did not know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. By the way, what scripture would that be? Scripture means something right in writing. It's not something Jesus said. Psalm 16 talks about it. All right? It's Psalm 16, 10. All right, anyway. Then the disciples went away again. And it says here, to their own homes. But the word homes is not in the original text. It's added by the translators. And the word own is a masculine term, and it probably means their own people. That is the other disciples, all right? The word homes is not there. It's, unfortunately, the translator stuck it in there. Now look what happens next. Peter and John leave. John believes that Jesus is resurrected. Peter's not so sure. But Mary stood outside. Now this is Mary Magdalene, who came before the sun came up, right? But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. Then they said to her, now notice there's two angels just as in Luke's account. Then they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Question, did Mary believe at this point that Jesus was resurrected? No. Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say teacher. That is, that's in the Aramaic language. Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her. All right, now, then it goes on to talk about what happened Sunday night. Okay, this is Sunday morning, what happened Sunday night. Now, we have some problems. Let's look at what the problems are. The first problem is that, according to Matthew, the women meet Jesus together after encountering the angels at the tomb while they're running back to tell the disciples. Mary Magdalene is specifically mentioned as being among the women who were going to the tomb. In Mark's account, it says, that is in Mark's second account, in B, it says Jesus appeared to Mary Magdalene first. That is before the other women. All right, we have to reconcile that problem. In John 20, Jesus appeared to Mary Magdalene first also. So the second account in Mark is consistent with John's account. All right. Now, in the next problem, Mary Magdalene and the woman arrived at the tomb after sunrise, it says. Or at least it says that these women, including Mary Magdalene, left to go to the tomb, and then it has the women arriving after sunrise. John says Mary arrived while it was still dark. In Luke's account, Peter ran to the tomb after Mary saw the angels and Jesus. But in John's account, Peter ran to the tomb before Mary Magdalene saw the angels and Jesus. Now, at first glance, these appear to be mutually exclusive things, right? A lot of people, a lot of Christians who believe that all of the Bible is God's word, believe that there are ways to reconcile all of these accounts. And several people have tried to reconcile them. I have got my own scenario. And if this scenario, as I give it, is what happened, it accounts for all of these things. All right? So I'm going to lay out for you what I believe is the correct scenario of the sequence of events. And I don't believe you'll be able to find any of the gospel accounts that conflict with this scenario. Okay, and this is what a good investigator would do with four witnesses that their stories don't match up exactly the same, and there appear to be conflicts. The first thing he's going to do is try to figure out, is there a scenario or a sequence of events that could account for all of these apparent differences? And if there is, then those witnesses are not being excluded as being false witnesses, right? All right, so let's look at what I believe. Here's what I believe happened. First of all, I'm going to make an assumption. And here's my assumption. The tomb was quite some distance away from the city of Jerusalem. Now, we remember that in the previous lesson we talked about the burial, that the tomb, it says it was very near to the place where Jesus was crucified. So if the tomb was far, quite a ways outside the city, let's say a mile or so outside the city, then the crucifixion was also quite a ways outside the city. All right, but let's assume that that's the case. Let's also assume that after the crucifixion, when Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus buried Jesus, and you know, some of the ladies and so forth saw where he was buried, and then they returned home, that they returned back into the city of Jerusalem. Because actually, Acts 1 tells us that they were staying in the city of Jerusalem shortly after Jesus' resurrection. So that's probably where they were all staying as well. So there's a house somewhere, or maybe a couple of houses, inside the city walls where the disciples, the men, were staying, and maybe another adjoining area where the women were staying. All right, they were all together because when they ran to tell the disciples, they didn't go to, you know, to all a bunch of different houses to tell them. They went to one location, right? Now, my other assumption is that Peter and John did not stay with the others. They stayed somewhere closer to where Jesus' tomb was for whatever reason. All right? But Peter and John were staying together. And let's say they were only a quarter of a mile away from where the tomb was, but the others were a mile and a half or 2 miles away. All right, let's just make that as an assumption. Now, let's see if we can construct these events without contradicting anything, but only assuming that each writer left out certain details, but he didn't put in anything that was false. All right, that's our assumptions, and let's see if this will work. All right, first of all, here's the first thing that happens. It says Mary Magdalene, Salome, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and other women, five plus women, left the house in Jerusalem to go out to the tomb. Now, it's Matthew says, as it began to dawn towards the first day of the week. Now, when you say as it began to dawn, you can kind of interpret that a couple different ways, but dawn actually takes a period of time to occur. The first thing that we know, I mean, it's dark outside, and then the first thing we see is just a very slight lightening of the sky in the east, right? And it takes a good half an hour or so before, after that, maybe close to 45 minutes, before you actually see the sun come up over the horizon. So we got a period of time, okay, that we're talking about. It's before the sun actually rose above the horizon, but it's still mostly dark. It's just barely starting to get light, just as that first hint that that day is coming. All right, that's what Matthew's talking about, in my opinion. So we have all these women all set out together from Jerusalem to go to the tomb, and they're carrying spices and things like that, right? They're hauling things. So what does Mary Magdalene do? I think Mary Magdalene ran ahead of the group. All right? She was eager to get to the tomb. And instead of waiting for the rest, she ran on ahead. Now, is that consistent with what the others say? Yes. It simply says that all these women, including Mary Magdalene, left to go to the tomb. All right? Mary Magdalene runs out ahead. She arrives at the tomb before the sun has come up over the horizon. That is, it hasn't actually dawned yet. She got there pretty fast. It's still mostly dark. And so she runs on ahead of the rest. And John's account basically has Mary arriving at the tomb by herself while it's still dark. And Mark's account simply says that Jesus appeared first to Mary Magdalene. All right? Okay. Now, number two, as they were traveling from Jerusalem, that is, while the women are on their way and while Mary is almost at the tomb, but they're still, you know, maybe a quarter of the way there, the angel descends, he rolls back the stone. Mary arrives immediately after that happens. And so what happens with Mary? Let's see. Mary Magdalene arrives at the tomb while it's still dark. She saw the stone was removed. Thinking that the body had been removed by the Jews, she ran to tell Peter and John. Now, Peter and John, as I said, I'm assuming were not staying in Jerusalem. They're staying at an area or a house nearby where the tomb is. So she knows that. She just runs over to Peter and where Peter and John are staying, and she's all excited, and she's telling them the stone is gone. The stone is gone. Somebody's taken the stone away, and they've, you know, the body's gone. So Peter and John, what do? They come running a very short distance. Now, while this is going on, the other women are still walking from Jerusalem. They haven't arrived yet. All right. So Peter and John run immediately to the tomb, which is close by. They saw the burial clothes. John believed that Jesus had risen. Peter did not. All right. The two of them then left the tomb, and they headed for Jerusalem to talk to the other disciples. That is where the ladies had come from. They're heading that way, all right? Now, they're going by, but what happens? Mary Magdalene remains at the tomb, weeping. Then, after Peter and John left, she saw the angels, according to John's account, and then she saw Jesus. And Jesus, that's, you know, when she encountered him, and he told her to go and tell his disciples. Now, Peter and John are already on their way back to Jerusalem. Mary Magdalene now is coming behind them, heading for Jerusalem as well, to talk to the other disciples. Peter, what do Peter and John know? That he's not in the tomb. The stone has been removed. He's not in the tomb. They didn't see any angels. Mary saw the angels after they left. All they saw was that the wrappings were laying by themselves. That's all they saw. That's all they knew. As far as Peter and John knew, somebody broke into the tomb and stole the body. And that's what Mary assumed as well, according to John's account, because when she saw the gardener, she says, or what she thought was the gardener, she says, you know, if you've taken away the body, tell me where you've taken him so I can take him. So she still thought the body had been removed. So that's what Peter and John thought while they're heading back to Jerusalem to talk to the other disciples. Somebody has tampered with the tomb and the body is gone. So Mary encounters Jesus. She knows the real story now. Peter and John are already ahead of her on their way back to Jerusalem. So Mary starts out running now to Jerusalem as well, but she's behind Peter and John. Both of them are going to tell the other disciples that are in a house in Jerusalem their stories. All right? Okay, so what happens next? Right after Mary leaves, the other four plus women arrive at the tomb. They see the angels. The angels instruct them to go back to Jerusalem and tell the other disciples what they have seen. Right? Now they're, so what you've got is you've got Peter and John. They're running. You got Mary Magdalene. Peter and John haven't seen Jesus. They just know the tomb's empty. Mary Magdalene's running back to Jerusalem, and she has seen Jesus. And now behind her, we have the rest of the women who saw the angels. They're heading back to Jerusalem to tell them as well, the other disciples. And then according to Matthew, they encounter Jesus also while they're running back. All right, now, we can expect that first Peter and John would arrive back at Jerusalem, because that's the order in which they're going, right? Peter and John arrive at Jerusalem, and they go into the house, and they tell the other disciples, the tomb has been broken into, the body's gone. And they're all, oh no, what's going on? Right after that, here comes Mary. She arrives at the house, and she's all excited, and she's saying, not only did she see the angels, she encountered Jesus, and he's alive. And did they believe him? Did they believe her? No, in fact, several of the Gospels say that, or a couple of the Gospels say that they didn't believe the women. In fact, it says that later when Jesus appeared to all of them, he chastised them for not believing the testimony of the women. Why didn't they believe the women? Because they're not credible. You have to put yourself in their culture, okay? The testimony of women is not credible because women are, you know, women are frantic. Women are, you know, they got a big imagination. Women are, you know, all emotional and stuff like that. Us guys, we're level-headed and logical, and, you know, people just don't pop out of their graves. I mean, really, if you go back and read Paul's account in 1 Corinthians 15 when he's talking about those who saw the Lord. He's saying that we have this list of witnesses. He was seen by Peter, then he was seen by the 12, then he was seen by over 500 brethren all at once. He doesn't list any women, but the women saw him first. Why doesn't Paul list the women? Again, you know, they're just emotional people. You can't hold up the women as being credible witnesses in a court of law. You know, now, look, I know that's I'm being facetious. But in that culture, that's the way they thought. Okay.
You know, especially when you see Mary Magdalene, who was a prostitute.
She had been a prostitute formerly. Yeah.
She would have had zero credibility, not just because she was a woman, but because she was a prostitute.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, so Peter and John arrive back at the house in Jerusalem. They're telling them their story. You know, he's not there. He's not in the tomb. Mary comes bursting in. You know, I'm sure she was bursting, and I'm sure one of the reasons why she's mentioned so much is because she was very lively, you know. But anyway, she comes bursting into the room, and she's telling her story, and while she's telling her story, and she's all excited, the other women come in, and they start telling their story that he's risen as well. Now, here's what happens next. Luke's account tells us that Peter, only Peter ran back to the tomb. Peter went to the tomb twice. This is why there appears to be a conflict. There is no conflict. Peter went back a second time to the tomb, and that's the account that we have in Luke's gospel. Peter went back again. And why would Peter go back again? Well, remember, the first time it was him and John, and it says John believed. It doesn't say Peter believed. It says John went in after Peter, and he, it's singular, he believed that Christ was risen. Peter was still having his doubts. You think Peter had some guilt going on too? He had denied him. When it was crucial, he had denied him. John, on the other hand, stood boldly with Jesus. Peter said, I don't know him, you know, when the poo hit the fan. And, you know, Jesus had predicted that to Peter, saying, before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times. And then when Peter actually denied Jesus, it says that Jesus looked at him, and then it says Peter went out and he wept bitterly. But he didn't see Jesus again. I mean, not one-on-one. He just saw him hauled away and crucified and put in a tomb. And Peter's thinking to himself, you know, what must he have thought of me? He said I was going to do this, and I did it, you know. But anyway, so Peter runs back to the tomb again to double check to see what? Why would Peter go back again? Okay, the women said there were angels, and Peter didn't see any angels when he was there, right? Not only that, all the women had encountered Jesus, right? Peter wanted to encounter Jesus. He went back to the tomb. And when we read Paul's account in 1 Corinthians 15, it has Peter listed as the first eyewitness, but again, he's only listing males. But when he's listing the credible witnesses of Christ's resurrection, he says he appeared to Peter, or he calls him Cephas, which is Peter's Aramaic name. All right, in his birth name was Simon. Jesus gave him the name Peter, but his name in Aramaic was Cephas. Peter in English. Well, Peter in Greek means a stone. Cephas in Aramaic means a stone. Okay, so it's the same name, it's just translated in a couple different languages. So Cephas, Simon, and Peter are all the same person. All right? Okay. So I have looked at this scenario, and I've looked at all the gospel accounts, and in my opinion, there is no conflicting details at all. Everything fits perfectly. When you make that assumption, the first assumption, which is Peter and John are staying close by the tomb, and that when Mary came, Mary running ahead of the rest, came to the tomb, as soon as she saw it was empty, she ran to Peter and John, who she knew were nearby. They got to the tomb before the rest of the women got there, and all these groups left. First, Peter and John left the tomb. Secondly, Mary Magdalene, after seeing Jesus, left the tomb. Shortly after that, the other women arrived at the tomb, saw the angels, and headed back to Jerusalem, and they saw Jesus on the way back. All right, and they arrived in that order, and it makes perfect sense that they would arrive in that order, and that Peter then would go back to have a second look at the tomb, hoping to encounter what the women had said they had encountered at the tomb. All right, does that make sense to everybody? Any questions or comments? Yes, Vera. There's more than three witnesses, but...
I understand it's each event. Here's one, then here's another one.
Yeah, yeah. Initially, they had first Mary. The fact that he had risen, yeah. Mary would be the first one to give testimony to that. Then the other women, and then he later, as we see in the Gospels, he appeared to all the disciples together. Now, we have the account of the two who were on the road to Emmaus, and him appearing to them. It's mentioned in Luke, and it's also mentioned in the second version that Mark has, I think in like one verse, but Luke gives a very detailed account of that. And we'll look at that next week. in part two of the resurrection. But I want, for this week, I just want you to see, and you're welcome to take the scenario as I gave it and see if you can find any holes in it or any details in any of the gospel accounts that would conflict with that scenario. But I haven't been able to find any problem with it at all. And I think that's exactly what happened. And if you look at it from different people's perspectives and these different writers of these gospels, they either saw certain things. I mean, John, he wrote this, right? John wrote this gospel, and John is the only one who records him accompanying Peter to the tomb early while it was still dark, after Mary Magdalene said that the stone was rolled away, right? So from John's perspective, you can see why he would include these details, because he was part of that. While the other accounts are not getting their testimony from John, they're getting their testimony from some of the others who were there, or some of the other ones who were in the room, like Matthew would have been in the house in Jerusalem when the women, or when Peter and John first arrived to say, you know, the body's gone, and then Mary Magdalene coming in hysterically saying that Jesus is risen, and then the other women coming and verifying it. I mean, you can see why Matthew then would write what he wrote from his perspective of simply observing the testimony of the people who were arriving, you know, and so forth. Luke interviewed a lot of people. Mark was associated with Peter. So anyway, in my opinion, it all fits perfectly, and there are no loose ends, so to speak, that need to be corrected. And it passes the test, in my opinion. If the accounts themselves are accurate, and that's a different question, but if the accounts themselves are accurate, then it passes the test, in my opinion, of being valid eyewitness testimony and ought to be believed. All right? Okay. Any questions or comments? Stephen?
In later John, when it talks about Christ appearing to the disciples in the upper room, the first time Thomas was not there,
yep.
Thomas returns and doesn't believe anybody, and then Jesus appears and
yep.
Presents himself physically. Thomas bows down and says, "My Lord, my God." And Jesus says to him, "You believe because you've seen me, but blessed are those who have not seen me and believe."
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think that was kind of a, not a big, but maybe an indirect reference to people of our time and those past the apostles who just accept everything on faith. But
yeah.
Those who have not seen me is in the aorist, right? So that we're looking at a past thing. So I think he's referring to Peter and John.
I don't know what the tense is there, but if that's correct, then yeah, that would seem so. Yeah. Yep. John especially. I mean, really, what convinced John? If you think about it, what did John see? When he went into the tomb, what did he see? Did he see angels? No. What did he see? He saw the body was gone, and the grave clothes had been folded up and were sitting there. That's all John saw. But it says he believed. He had a lot of faith. And remember, Jesus had said several times to his disciples prior to his crucifixion that he was going to be killed and he would rise again the third day. John saw that. He believed it. Boom.
One of the verses, I can't remember which account it's in. I think it's the one where it talks about Peter and John being there together and then John believed. And the reference to Psalm 16 where it says that
yeah. Yeah, that's the whole group.
Yeah, it was
as a group.
In that moment, it clicked with John. This is what he's been saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think John got it right then on the spot. Later when he appears to the others in Luke 24, it talks about how Jesus then went and took the Old Testament scriptures and he explained all these scriptures that prophesied about himself. He explained it to them. So we'll talk about that next week, actually. I have a lot to say about the road to Emmaus and all that. But, all right, anybody else? Questions, comments? No? Okay.